Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Driving More Show. Hi, I'm Paul and I'll be your host this evening while we wrap up all the action that we've had from the Six Nations and also Super Rugby. Now, first up, folks, I'm sorry, we didn't have a show last week and that's because I was down with COVID. I was in bed, sneezing and coughing and all that kind of stuff and not feeling too happy with myself. So, but feeling much better now and being joined by Cornflake. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. Good to be back. I'm not super sick, but I'm just like hungover of lack of sleep, and it's all you Northern Hemisphere's faults. All right,
it's all I was going to say, having done a solid 8.5 hour live stream watch along for all three Six Nations games on Super Saturday, you're looking rather bright eyed and bushy tailed, sir. I must say,
I'll take it. I don't feel it, but I'll take it.
So we'll probably mainly talk about Six Nations tonight. We'll wrap up, obviously, the last couple of rounds of Super Rugby as well. As the Six Nations has come to a conclusion, I think that's probably where we'll be spending most of our time this evening. And let's kick straight off with that. So a brief summary of round four. Now, round four was a cracking round of rugby. I mean, we came into this tournament going, you know what? The opening game between France and Ireland will decide who wins this. And they've really scheduled this really badly, this tournament. They don't know what they're doing. Round four sees Italy beat Scotland 31-29, England beat Ireland 23-22, and Wales really didn't join the party, losing to France 24-45. Round four was upset city, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a weird round. You say that, you know, Wales weren't at the party, but a team that hasn't been at the party for the whole competition in France actually showed up and decided they wanted to party for a change. So yeah, we got a bit of a difference there. We finally learned that Ireland are not indestructible like we kind of thought in the opening three rounds of the competition. And hey, after France and Italy the week before, and after we know all about the Scots and we know all about the way that they just, I don't, they're just not competent mentally, right? And they probably thought, oh dear, look what happened last week. Oh dear, we're next. Oh dear, they're fired up. And hey, look, the Italians, how good, man. How good are the Italians right now? So you're really good round. And I think good for the competition too, because it kind of shook it up. Because everyone was just like, Ireland's already cleaned everything up. You know, Italy's going to finish last. Yeah, France don't know how to play rugby anymore. And Wales, well, they're rebuilding still, right? So it was kind of like, hey, everything's just trekking along. It is what it is. And then, hey, bang, bish, bash, bosh. Three in a row, everyone's like, whoa, this competition's changed. It's on its head. Let's go.
And yeah, look, let's be honest here. In that France, Wales-France game, Wales were leading 24-20 after 45 minutes, right? So, and then essentially the big bodies of France just overran Wales. They just couldn't cope with the power. And France then ran out by scoring three unanswered tries and a penalty to make it a comfortable win in the end. But that wasn't, it wasn't looking comfortable for the first, as I say, well, that's about the hour mark, really, for France. So even though I am dissing Wales there, I say it didn't turn up for the party, they kind of did, but they just ran out of steam And they went hard, they went early, and then they crashed big time in that one, which seems to be Wales's kind of thing. They don't seem to put a full 80 minutes together. They'll either start slowly and then go, oh, shit, there's a game, we better join in, or they'll go hard early and then run out of steam, one way or the other, it seems, in this one. So,
wasn't it only about the hour mark, too? They were behind by three, 60, 65 minutes. I think it was like 27, 24 or something like that. I think there's the last points that they scored, somewhere around the 60-minute mark. So they were really in this game right, pretty much right to the very, very end. It just, I mean, scoreline blew that out. But you know what the big thing about that game for me was? The reserves. One for Wales is that the reserves come on and didn't have an impact. And for France, oh my goodness me, that Colombia guy, who was the backup at La Rochelle, if I'm not mistaken, for Antonio, who is the starting prop for France. He's a reserve on the bench in the top 14. Now he's a reserve on the bench for France. He is absolutely huge, massive guy. He scored the try. But yeah, just the impact of the reserves, the size, the power, just, I mean, again, we look at France and it's like, you look at the names, you see the bodies and you're like, how are you not doing better than this in this competition? Despite the fact that they end up finishing second, I'm pretty sure, in the end. But still, the fact that what those guys can bring and, you know, the impact off the bench blew Wales completely out of the water. And, you know, I think 45-24 is very, blows that scoreline completely out of perspective for the poor old Welsh, who were pretty sad sack after that. I can tell you what, feedback from their fans was doom and gloom, let's be honest, to say the least.
Well, I think after you'd seen Italy push France, there was always thought of, oh, Wales can beat France now. And there was too much positivity that shouldn't have been there, really, unfortunately. It's one of those ones, it's the hope that kills you, as they say.
It's a different team, though. Very different. Like, the way France played against Italy. But they just look at the fact that it's like, that's Italy. That's France, right? And it's like, that's the focus. Like, well, why do they play, you know, almost lose that game, but then we can't beat them, you know? It's like, well, geez, watch the games. You're watching two very, very, very different French teams. And then moving into the round five as well, very, very different. And to me, I put that down to even in this game against Wales, Ligarik, he's now starting number nine, young kid, poor boy. I mean, I didn't want to say anything was about Dupont about this team. I thought, no, it can't be. One player can't have this big of an impact. But seeing a guy like him, the way he comes in and plays, and his, not just like his pass or anything like that, but as a scrum half, in the way that he actually follows play. Just something like that just really sparks that team. He's always there. He's quick to the rucks. He's in support. And he's just a very good, agile, athletic sort of guy that gets everywhere around the park. And just his play style seems to complement that team. And, hey, look at the difference. I mean, I put a lot of that down to him and his ability over Aluku, who I think was not even at the races for that French side.
And the other thing that got me there also is Ramos suddenly being put into the number 10 jersey as well for these last two rounds. I thought that was a crazy idea at first when I saw it, because it's like, hey, look, he is one of the best fullbacks in world rugby. And why are you putting him in a place where he hasn't got space? But apparently it's worked. So, it's a total change for them in the halfbacks. Has invigorated them for the last two rounds.
You know what's really funny about that as well is I'm just double checking as to what it is. But on the Six Nations fantasy, with your picking your players for your fantasy team, Leo Barry, who actually come into a place at fullback for Ramos, is technically listed as a fly half. So they've come down a complete switcheroo. I've just looked him up there, and he seems to be able to play in centre and fullback and fly half as well. But you know, you'd think you'd not change what's not broken, right? So, you know, Ramos is clearly working at 15, you know, but they've gone, well, no, we think this is going to work better for us. And hey, he got man of the match in round five as well, buddy. I thought he was pretty unimpressive in round four, but hey, it's working again. Very young. And, you know, we talk about Wales and we talk about all the other teams with the youth coming through and having that transition period. I think we're seeing a bit of this from France now as well, in transitional periods with opportunities and positions with injuries and availabilities. They're actually blooding these guys through. When you're not really noticing it, you're saying, oh, you know, it's France. Now, they go through players like we go through socks, and changing them traditionally. Yeah, you know, they do it quite a lot. But, hey, this is actually working out here. And you think when Intermax coming back soon and obviously the Dupont's coming back later on, those guys come back, it's like, oh, that depth, You know, I mentioned Ligara coming off the bench behind Dupont. You've got Intermac, you've got Jaminier, you've now got Ramos, you can switch out Leo Bar. You know, you've got guys who are experienced, and it's like, hello. Look, we've got a big squad now of players that are all fighting and the capability for starting in that 15. So really good for France, I think, in their future. Tournament-wise overall, though, I think, you know, it's been quite good for them.
Oh, we'll get back to overall tournament for everyone. Yes. And then finally, the final thing I want to talk about from last week, from the previous weekend, was obviously England versus Ireland. Lots of talk all week in regard to that about England spending all their time on defence, and they turn up and suddenly they've got an attack that's clicking. I mean...
And a lot of talk in the media too from Ireland about the only chance England have is if Ireland get at least two cards or three, and one of them will have to be red. So pretty much saying you're not going to beat us at 15, you got no chance. And that, wow, went straight back in their face within the first 5 minutes of that final whistle going off. I can tell you that there was a lot of that going straight back.
And look, Ford had an absolute shocker from the boot as well that day, missing four kicks. Crowley also missing one as well. So, Daly also missing one as well. So a lot of points left out there by England in that one. But they importantly here, they didn't let the game get too far ahead of them and get too far away. Sure, so 8-12 at halftime. Now the James Lowe one after halftime brought that up to 8-17. But then they were first to strike back with Furbank, who showed why he's come in instead of Stewart there. No, not Stewart. I've got the wrong name.
Sergeant. Marcus Smith on the bench?
Stewart, yeah. But
Freddie Stewart's out injured. He's been out for most of the competition.
But Furbank was I thought it was a tactical replacement initially for...
Stewart?
Who am I thinking of? Oh, I gone blank. England's...
Stewart's been the England fullback throughout... Freddie Stewart, yep.
Yeah, pretty sure, exactly. Yeah, so I thought it was a tactical decision, the initial replacement rather than injury. But okay, maybe I'm wrong. But so yeah, he came in and showed his shown why they're happy to have Furbank there in that one. So a nice Marcus Smith drop goal to finish things off. England love the drop goal at the moment. That was one that's. I mean, quite a few of these games went down to the wire. Look, that draw between Italy and France there was a last minute penalty in there that could have decided it. Scotland got close to Italy with a last minute try. So perhaps that made the that win what perhaps was a bit more comfortable than those 2 points suggest there. But anyway, let's get on to this week then. So coming into the final weekend, and sorry, I'm still a bit snotty here. Wales versus Italy. Italy coming off the back of a draw and a win. Clearly, cock-a-hoop. Wales off the back of four losses. So really in a bit of a problem. And Italy sort of took this game by the scruff of the neck to take an 11-0 lead at halftime, and then to push it out to 18-0. Okay, we've seen Wales come back against Scotland, but Scotland really did. Have a shocker in that second half, giving up penalty after penalty after penalty. It looked dead and buried there. Perhaps a situation Italy aren't used to being in.
Yeah, Italy changed their game style quite significantly in their second half. So they got up 11 points at halftime. And the discussion was, you know, that's not enough. It doesn't matter who you're playing. 11 points is only a couple of moments of brilliance, right? And you're trailing the game. So I felt like they needed a bit more. They got that bit more. Up to 18 points, they kind of went into, okay, we feel like we've got enough. Let's just force everything down that end of the field, shore up our defence, and just pin back, and not take really any sort of attacking ball at all. They kind of shut up shop, went into defensive mode, thought they had enough. And, geez, when you look at the final score, you thought you had a really close game, but you just had Wales that decided to get one little moment of brilliance, one good well-worked try where they actually put it through and constructed something decent going through Elliot D. But then, you know, the next couple were kind of like, oh, this is how you score tries. And the penny sort of dropped. And I tell you what, that last, you know, few minutes that led to, you know, Mason Grady try at the end, really was a different game. And I think composure's all went out the window. Italy were like, oh, crap, this is getting really, really close. Wales were like, oh, we know how to win this game. We're running out of time. Everyone just went completely, you know, bonkers. They didn't know what to do. One team full of confidence for 70 minutes lost all their confidence in about 2 minutes. And they all completely switched. A really ferocious end to the game. In the end, wasn't really in threat because clearly that last try was after the 80th minute. But good to see that Wales actually developed and learned something there. But the Italians, I think they shut up shop. I think they should just keep playing the attacking game, keep getting into the good areas and trying to get themselves a good platform to attack from instead of just trying to shut the game out. Like they could have won that game, you know, got up to a 20-point lead and then raced away, you know, just pushed away at it. But you know, I think they shut up shop a bit too quick.
look, they used penalties to keep themselves ahead. I mean, they actually lost this game 3-2 as far as tries are concerned. So they scored less tries in this one. But yeah, so it just kept that scoreboard ticking over with those penalties to keep themselves ahead, which I think can be a very good tactic. And look, the it was 7-24 with 1 minute left on the clock. All right.
Yep.
There was a try on 79 minutes, and then there was a try 3 minutes into overtime. Those final 14 points, the game was gone. They'd already lost it. They could not physically win the game. They couldn't score any more points in the time they had left. So, especially, it might have looked a bit hectic towards the end there, but that's probably, again, comes down to experience within Italy going, actually, you know what, guys? This doesn't matter. Just calm down. Relax. They can't win. All we have to do is just not give away penalties, keep tackling, and wait for them to knock the ball on, because it will happen if we. I think Italy will have taken a lot from these games, and that composure going forwards. I think is only really good for Italy. Now,
if you want to, like, that's the first time in I think 16 years that Italy haven't got the wooden spoon. So a monumental occasion for them to come away with much better result throughout the whole season. But this game, like first half, like we talk about the finish and how exciting it was and how we obviously Italy played throughout the game to build that lead. But Wales were absolutely horrific. Like we looked back that Scotland game against Wales and, you know, Scotland really held the ball. They dominated the game. They didn't let Wales play. It was all in the Blues, right? The Scots had the game, the ball pretty much the whole first half. This game, Wales had opportunities. They had chances. But, man, the errors, just silly drops. I mean, a fullback and winger colliding, going for a kick from Italy, going into their 22, and they collided into each other, knocked the ball on. I mean, just stupid stuff like that. I mean, if Gatland has any strings of hair left on his head after this competition, then they'll be falling out in the next couple of days. Even, I don't know if you saw it, but he offered his resignation up straight after this game. He offered to resign, and they rejected it. So he's not going away. He had a press conference the next day, and he said he's looking forward to the World Cup. So, I mean, Gatland, to me, his mind has gone from Wales. He's not in this show whatsoever. He's there. Because he's there. Does he want to be there? I don't think so. But let's see. He'll probably just milk it for the rest of the time. But yeah, Wales, terrible in that first half. And controversy to what I said before about how poor that they were against the French off the bench, this week, they were actually really good off the bench. Really added a lot of impact. Like Mason Grady got that last try, but you know, Nick Tompkins had a shocker. Like he has all tournament. Grady come on, changed things. Lloyd coming on for Costello really sparked things up for them as well. Just gave them a bit more attacking threat. They looked more dangerous. They caught the ball. Just, you know, things like that really made a difference for that Welsh team. So a lot better performance on the bench. But hey, it's the Wales. And we talk about it all through, right? This is Wales that just need to learn. They need to look at it. They need to adapt. They need to find players they want to continue with. Who's going to make it to this grade? Who's not going to make it to this grade? I think they've learned a lot. A absolute lot, a stack from this season, the Six Nations. I don't think there's too much to be negative about either. I think they've really unearthed some players. Oh, wow. Now they've got to take the next step, and they've got to keep these guys around. They've really got to keep these guys around and make sure that they're here for the next, or in Wales, not here, for the next, you know, 4-year cycle.
So, yeah, Chris, they said, hey, any Wales players stand out this Six Nations? Ian Lloyd, definitely stood out in a couple of the early games. So look, they've got a bit of depth there with Costello at 10, which I think is a good sign when you think they've lost Anscombe and Bigger and also Pratchell. The 10 has been a really gaping chasm that they need to fill. I think they've got a couple of players in there for that. I think they've a couple of Lucy's have stood up as well, but they always do for Wales. And let's be honest, it's good to see Wainwright back playing well, for example, in there. A player who there was, I think, lots of good, also kind of good vibes about him. Then he sort of disappeared for a while, perhaps when Pivac was there. But he's come back and seems to be playing well as well. So, as you say, yeah, no, look, players that have stood out. But we said pre-season or pre-Six Nations that actually, or any names that you want to just talk about quickly?
No, I'll definitely agree with you on those. I think Lloyd is, to me, I want to see Lloyd start again. He got that game in round 2 of 3 where he started over Costello and he had a bit of a shocker. It wasn't his greatest game, but the impact he brings off the bench, I kind of want to see him get another chance. Costello, to me, just doesn't... He's solid, but he doesn't quite bring that next level for me. He can improve, sure, he's got plenty of time, but we saw a lot of times he kicked a touch and didn't find touch. You know, just simple little things like that. Hey, will Lloyd do the same? I mean, we won't know until we get some good minutes out of him to see that opportunity for him. But yeah, I like what they've got in the 10s. Again, Mason Grady, I think, brings a lot off the bench. I think, again, Nick Tompkins needs to go out of that 12 jersey. A real shame about Jules North getting that big injury too. That looked quite bad in his final international appearance. So that was quite a shame. But they've got that midfield they need to fill up. They have a couple of players they can fill in there as well. But if you're going to go from the back, Cameron Winnett, I thought it was really good. Cam Winnett looked really, really nice. Little guy, really safe under the high ball. Wants to run with the ball as well. Looked quite dangerous. Rio Dyer, massive build on from the World Cup. Definitely a threat. And for Wales, Rio Dyer is a guy that can actually be given the ball in a situation where there's nothing really on and make something happen. And so that sort of reliability or X factor of a player, I think, is going to be really, really key for them. But I think their massive standout has been Tommy Rafael. He's been incredible. Easily the best player in a Welsh jersey throughout the Six Nations. First man on the team sheet for me. And at the ruck, he's incredible. So I think they've got, a solid spine throughout the team. Like, the second rows are pretty good. You've got Jenkins, you've got the Beds, you've got the Rollins as well. And it seemed to work out, I think, the depth of that front row, especially find out who their best 4 or 5 props are so that they can actually get that depth off the bench, because that seemed a bit of a shaky area with their scrum. But yeah, they've got at least one or two guys in each sort of key area that I think they can definitely build on and rotate through what they have here and find themselves. I think they can find themselves a decent 20 to 30 players in the next couple of years, and they'll be looking like they should be a competition team come the World Cup time.
Yeah, look, it's a real shame that George North had to retire. He's 31, 121 caps for Wales, and another 3 for the British and Irish Lions. So second highest try scorer for Wales ever. So yeah, it's a real shame there on that one. Looking at our pre-tournament thing about Wales was they needed to be competitive and show growth, right? Yep. Now, were they competitive? Yes, they were for half a game with Scotland once the game was gone. Yes, they were for the first half against England, but then the game went against Ireland. No, but then again, they weren't the only team, right? Ireland looked good for the first 3 rounds. Against France, again, they were competitive. Then they fell apart. Against Italy, not really. They weren't competitive, and then they kind of made it look competitive at the end. I think they'll be slightly disappointed by this tournament that they couldn't put a full game together. Yes, they were competitive for halves, but never for 80 minutes. And I think that's going to be probably the disappointing thing for them, more so than the fact that they lost all four of their games. Or 5 again, sorry.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. I think development-wise, I think they'll be very pleased. I think they've got a big list of players now that they kind of know what to expect or know what they're going to bring to the team. But doubling on that, I think they've also lacked consistency. So you'll see players come off the bench for 20 minutes and look really, really good, earn themselves a start for the next week, and then play really, really poorly for 40, 50, 60 minutes. So that's a big thing, I think, form. A consistency in performances and things like that have to be something they improve on. But yeah, result-wise, if you don't look at the scoreboards, you look at how they actually played, yeah, they never really put together a full performance. They always fell apart either early or late. But when they were good, boy, they were good. So, I mean, you gotta look at it. The highs are high, but the lows are low at the same time. They can be really, really good or they can be really, really poor. I think on their day, you know, for 20, 30 minute periods, they'll give anyone a run for their money with how they can play. But belief and just the consistency is going to be something that's going to hound that team. But I mean, that comes with experience too, right? You got to remember these guys are all very young, a lot of them. So once they play a bit more, get a few more tests under their belt, you know, travel the world like they do as international rugby players, I think that'll come with time. So, you know, to me, I think there's a bit of positivity about Wales, but I think their biggest struggle is just going to be keeping this core together, not letting them go to premiership clubs, not letting them go to France, trying to keep them in Wales. And, you know, like someone said about the, you know, the money there with the coach. I do believe if Gatland goes, what they need to do, and I kind of feel like they missed a chance here with him offering himself off here, is just to go and find a club coach, someone who's not a huge name. Don't go after the big names. I think that's where they got their mindset kind of wrong, to go after someone who they go, wow, you were getting this big, flash, internationally recognised coach. They need to go and find, you know, a club coach in the Premiership, in the URC, wherever, someone who's a younger player who wants to prove themselves and wants to commit and plays the style of rugby that Wales want to play, right? They got all these young guys. I think they can build themselves together, not spend big on a coach that's really just going to be there to cash in and actually just try and develop not only their players, but a coaching team as well, and build themselves over the next 4-8 years with that same sort of core in their group. So that would be my challenge to them, but we'll see how they go.
Well, I think Alan's the right person there. I think actually having that... I think having that figurehead is actually a good thing for them, and he takes a lot of the pressure off the players as well. And he's got a lot of credit in the bank from his previous years there that allows them to have tournaments like this where they do lose all the games, and there not be too much pressure on the players afterwards. Italy then
go back to his farm. You don't want to be in Wales.
Italy on the flip side, look, pushed England close, 24-27. In that opening game, surely it was a try after full time that perhaps made it look a bit closer than it was. It actually was perhaps a 2-score lead. Then had that got beaten by comfortably by Ireland, but again, as we said, not the only team that happened to in this tournament. Draw with France that a lot of people think they should have won because they should have been allowed to retake that penalty. To beat Scotland 31-29. Now remember, Scotland, that was a late score to close it up. So again, a 2-score win actually for them there. And again, a 2-score win over Wales as well, or maybe even 3, depending on how you look at it, 21-24. And again, we said pre-tournament, the goal for Italy, be competitive, to have won 2 games, had a draw, got relatively close with England, not being blown out of the park. This is a massive overachievement for Italy, I would say, in this one. Sure, they've come second last, I mean, from that point of view, but to have got 2 wins and a draw, I think it's a fantastic result for them in this tournament.
Yeah, no, the Italians have been the team to watch, just about, haven't they? Watching their growth, the development, their progression, and watching them being written off constantly and then now feared over, you know, 5 weeks is quite incredible how they can go from the team everyone wants to play to the team that no one wants to play because they're worried that they're going to get slipped over by the Italians. But no, so good. And, you know, it hasn't been without the worries, too, for them. Like, they've been missing Capazzo for a few of these games as well, which has been quite a talisman for their attack in the way that he can individually do something brilliant. So it's been really, really good. Just the growth and the way that they play. And I just think their style and how they can really turn it on. If you're going to look through this league and over the 5 weeks that they played, Italy are probably one of the teams that come up with the better tries, as in, structurally very beautiful to watch, finding the spaces, manipulating the numbers, and players working really, really hard to get into positions to create those opportunities. So they're doing all the right things. I find them really fun to watch. And, you know, like Wales, when they go, they can go. But this Italian team, when they go, you know, like Italians do, they make it look really, really pretty and really, really fun too. So I'm excited by them. And look, they're building depth, missing players. So again, like France, you know, they've got these guys coming in and actually up to the level, up to the standard. So all good for the Italians, you know. Lucky, unlucky for them not to finish higher, but just goes to show how close that was to the middle of the table when you've got, you know, those 3 teams above them. There were just 1 point between them. They were just, 3 points further back. So just goes to show, man, one game, you know, that win with France, man, and that whole table changes. I tell you, that one kick, Would have put this whole competition almost on its head with the way those middle, those teams go. But yeah, real positive for Italy. Really, really positive. Great team.
Unfortunately for them, they did only score 9 tries, which is the fewest out of anybody. The next fewest is Scotland with 12. And they allowed in 16, which was the highest out of anybody. But they only allowed in 126 points. But I think France allowed 122, England 123, Scotland 115. So from that point of view, defensively, sure, they let in more tries, but they didn't give up penalties, for example. So a good performance. You'd say, because they had well-structured tries, you'd say they probably scored more tries than Wales. But they didn't. But they're more memorable from that point of view. So,
oh, yes.
Yes. Anyway, the reviewer says they said they would get 2 wins as a goal. Well, look, I'm sorry, that might have been their goal, but I think expectations generally weren't that they would get anywhere near 2. To be honest, one was the expectation was probably that they would be in for a scrap with Wales on the final round to get that one win they wanted was kind of what everyone expected. So to me, they exceeded people's expectations, even if they only met their own. On that one.
Yeah, I mean, they were incredible, weren't they? Like, who would have thought they'd gone to that last round of that wooden spoon decider against Wales with a draw and a win already on the board? I mean, points aside, they went in with momentum, and incredible momentum as well.
So moving on then to the second game of the round, Ireland versus Scotland. Ireland coming off the back of three opening rounds where people were saying they've actually got better without Sexton and they're better than they were pre-World Cup. Crashing down to that loss to England, and then suddenly in this game, not being able to Ireland's against Scotland have had a good record recently. Scotland really have struggled against Ireland, and in this game they couldn't get away from Scotland. Only 7-6 at half time. They managed to score 1 try there, a couple of penalties from Russell. Sure, they came out and got themselves a penalty and a try to pull themselves out to a 17-6 lead. But that got trimmed with a couple of minutes left, get back to 17-13. This was not a dominant performance by Ireland that we'd seen those three opening rounds. Perhaps have they gone backwards in these last 2 games?
Mm. Yeah, that might be a fair statement. Yeah, if you really put it down to the way that they performed. But This game, I was talking about this before we started, went live, weren't we? Because I was trying to jog my memory as to what happened being so long ago, 28 hours, whatever it was. But this is a game that really baffled me. Because when you think about these teams before they play, you think about Ireland as a team that's going to have very fast, aggressive defense. I'm going to be very good at the breakdown. When they get their opportunity to score, they're generally pretty clinical. And that's how they put the teams away, right? And even in Scotland, you're like, well, they don't really like to tackle. But when you get the ball, they'll run. And they like to make some explosive opportunities with the team, all the players that they've got. This game was a complete opposite. I've never seen Scotland defend
I think also Scotland coming into this one, off the back of not having Hamish Stewart anymore, not having Jamie Ritchie, their ex-captain anymore, they weren't the force at the breakdown that we've seen in the past either. So they came into this one with actually a pretty poor breakdown record as well.
And well, it's just kind of ironic, the match that Andy Christie had, who should have been man of the match in that back row. He was simply phenomenal. The fact they gave this to Gibson Park baffled me completely. But Christie was, yeah, phenomenal. But defensively...
You have to give it to the team that wins, right?
No, you don't. You give it to the player who was a standout. And when it's a close game like this, really, 1 or 2, 2 and fro, doesn't really matter. But still, defensively, incredible. Absolutely incredible. Phenomenal. They took points when they were on offer. They didn't really look like they were going to score many tries throughout the game. But with the way that they're actually being able to defend, and when you see Ireland on someone's 5-meter line for that much period of time and not coming away with points, not even 3s, you know, it's remarkable. I think, you know, if you want to watch how to play against Ireland defensively, maybe watch this game for goal line defense, especially from Scotland, because they really, really were quite outstanding around that tight. You know, Ireland, when they're in that position, go to those forwards. They normally eventually just baffle their way over, don't they? Just normally plow over through someone, whether it's a Byrne, an Omani, a Doris, or even the big guys, the Porters, the Furlongs, the Sheehans as well. And really are incredible. So great work. maybe if they cleaned up the errors, Scotland, they could have been more in this game, because that Dan Sheehan try was a gift. They might as well put a bow on the ball before it was thrown into that line-out from Turner, because this went straight over the top. Sheehan was at the back.
Throwing it over the top. Jeez.
A big take, that 7 points off. And hello, you've won the game, Scotland. Maybe not that simple, right? But still, you know, stupid stuff like that that can make, you know, in a game that's only got, what, 30 points altogether, and you're gifting away seven, which is almost, you know, that's probably a quarter of the points overall, makes a big, big difference in the end. But, yeah, great defense from Scotland. And, yeah, Ireland maybe just not as clinical, not as strong. Hey, maybe running out of steam near the end of the season of Six Nations? I don't know. But just something just was not quite on the money for them. And no one particular, they didn't play badly. I just think they got shut down by some good defense.
They didn't defend well. I mean, look, so Ireland made 116 tackles. Scotland made 233, right? So twice as many
Ireland
tackles.
Missed more.
Right. And Ireland missed more tackles. Yes. Ireland missed 26 tackles. Scotland only missed 21. I mean, that's crazy. If you look at the from a player point of view here of the pack, so Schumann 17, Turner 15, Ferguson 22, Gilchrist 12, Cummings 25, Christie 28, Darge 15, Dempsey 20, right? All of those tackles. People, sorry?
They're tackles?
That's all tackles, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, that's tackles for each for their forwards. All of their forwards made as many or more than the highest tackling forward of Ireland, which was Byrne and Omani, who made 12 each. The lowest person in that pack was 12 by Gilchrist, there, who's there. I mean, he's the lineout guy, right? He's that's his kind of his main job. But still, he got through as many tackles as the most tackles by an Irish player, and he didn't miss any either. Cracking form, and across those ones, those forwards only missed four tackles, right? The backs not so good. Mr. Jones missed five tackles, but he did score a cracking try. Kinghorn missed five tackles as well. So the backs missed all the tackles. So even when we say Scotland missed 21 tackles, right? 10 of those were from Jones and Kinghorn, a couple from Ben White. Now, look, scrum halves, if you're picking your scrum half because he doesn't miss tackles, you're picking him for the wrong reason, right? That's not why he's there at the end of the day. So only four tackles missed by those forwards. Okay, Sutherland came on and missed one as well. But that is a massive shift by that forward pack. Mm. And you've got to give them, you've got to hat tip them there because, yes, lots of sides, I'm looking at you, the All Blacks, have not been able to stand up to these Irish forwards doing that to them, right? But this Scottish side did, and that is a massive. Now, can Scotland back that up again? I'm not sure. We'll have to wait and see because that'll take a lot out of them. But boy, oh boy, impressive shift there, even if they did come up short in the end.
Yeah, I mean, Nocturnal saying that tackles were missed on the edges. Yeah, that's because when they got close to scoring tries, the edges did not exist, as in they never went more than two passes out. And that was when, you know, a close prop, instead of just charging it, popped it off to the guy next to him. They really, I mean, if you want to be critical, I guess you could say Ireland were pretty unimaginative in their attacking opportunities. They didn't really go away from what's worked for the last how many years, which, I mean, can you blame them? But I guess you've got finishers out there, right? I mean, Lowe got a couple of tries last week. You've got guys that can do the job. So maybe they should have been a bit more experimental with their options or their opportunities. But in a close game like that, you just go back to what you know. And that's what Ireland know. But boy, that Scottish defence was tenacious. It really was fiery. And you watch the game too, and you're like, well, surely they're going to, you know, that halftime tackle count was, I think they were all, Scotland was almost triple what Ireland had made tackle was. And you think, well, surely, you know, 50 minutes, 60 minutes, that's going to catch up. They can't do a South Africa and replace their whole pack in one go. So although Ireland tried that in round four and it completely backfired on them, I think that's the main reason why they lost to England, by the way, going back to that. They had a 6-2 split bench. They got an injury on the wing, and then they got an injury to a midfielder, and they had Gibson Park on the wing. They had Conor Murray coming on at nine, who couldn't kick to save his life. I think that had a huge influence on that game in that round. This time, they went back to the 6-2. Didn't affect them so much, but still, maybe use the backs. I mean, you got a big battering ram in there in Archie. Why not use him a little bit more through those sort of areas? Even he did come in close, but, you know, when you get him in a one-on-one with another midfielder or something like that, he's a bit more effective than charging straight into the likes of your Cummins, your Christies and Darges and guys like that. But yeah, I mean, to me, yeah, you lost the match, Scotland. I thought this would be a 42-36 sort of scoreline, you know, high scoring, but both sides prioritising attack over defence. Really contrasting, but intriguing sort of to watch how these sides adapted. But yeah, for Scotland, can you do it again? That's a big question. I think they found a bit of an answer at six of Christie. I was very impressed with him.
Yeah, that's that loose trio. And also, for me, anyway, so let's moving on. But for Ireland, then,
yep,
cracking start to the tournament. We said, look, that it was winning the tournament with, and looking at a Grand Slam was their expectations. They came up short there with that loss to England. And to have been so close with Scotland, I think they'll be disappointed with how they finished the tournament off, but started it in great style, personally, there with that one. And it's not like you're looking through going, geez, where's, it's not like they've got a massive injury list either. All right. There's well. So, they've pretty much had, most of the players. Okay. Sure. They had that tactical error and a bit unfortunate with the, with those injuries against England, but even so, I think that they will be disappointed with their tournament. Scotland, on the flip side, now I listened to a Scottish podcast today. It was prior to this weekend. They were saying it was very peaky, i.e., they were either very good or bloody awful this tournament. yes, they started really well against Wales. But that all went south very quickly. Let's be honest with that. And then they beat England, but they always beat England nowadays, it seems. But to lose to France or not really look like being an off colour France, let's be blunt, particularly at that stage of the tournament. Then to lose to Twitley as well. This is a very disappointing one. For this was supposed to be their best opportunity of winning a championship. They had to be looking at third and pushing both France and Ireland's close. I think it's a poor one, but ending on a valiant loss. But that's Scotland forever, isn't it? Valiant losses. I think Scotland underperformed in this tournament, and Ireland. Look, they've won it, so you can't be too upset. And their one loss did come with a couple of a little less asterisks maybe around those injuries. So Ireland about maybe met, maybe slightly below expectation for me.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I think Ireland, you started off well as they would like to, fell off. I think that'll be the disappointing thing to them. Didn't you know, you kind of want to get better as you progress, right, and finish stronger, but they've not really managed to do that. So I think, you know, they got the win, didn't get the Grand Slam. That'll disappoint them. You know, no one won the Triple Crown either with that result against England. So they're all not great in the end in terms of that. But still, you know, got the result, won the competition, and that'll be the minimum for them. Scotland, I think you summed it up just by saying typical Scotland. Really good in patches, brain dead in others.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We summed them up. I think that Wales game summed them up completely. When they're good, absolutely phenomenal. And when they're bad, absolutely terrible. And I just think it's mental. There's mental issues for the Scots then. We'll see Will they clean that up? I highly doubt it. Scotland's not changing. But yeah, what's our thoughts? Disappointing for Scotland. Way under par. Way under par. Too many losses. Especially to finish it off like that as well against the Italians. That would have been a no-go.
Finally then, France versus England. France coming off the... I've got lost all my scores now. Oh, geez. Stupid bloody phone. But England coming off the back, obviously, that win over Ireland. France coming off the back of a beating France. Wales, but have been having to use the bench to beat Wales at the end there. Coming into this one, you said this was your favourite game of the weekend. I think pretty much you said this was a really exciting game that finished 33-31. England coming into this tournament was off the back of that that game against South Africa, which was the epitome of 10-man rugby. Could they expand it? Lots of talk during this tournament about defence, and yet actually we've got an England side that's got an attack about it, which is a bit surprising coming out the tournament.
Yeah, look, this game, you never know what to expect from England. That's your concern. Are they going to come out, they're just going to kick and watch and play a bit of tennis, or are they actually going to play a bit of rugby? Because we've seen from them that they have got the ability to play that little bit of rugby, right? We saw it against the Irish, where they scored tries. You know, they scored in fives and sevens, which is just like, what? Since when did England know how to do that? But what really got me about this game was how absolutely clinically fast and explosive and dangerous that French team look. Just a team that can attack you with such precision to break your line, offload, but not only beat you on the outside of pace, but they can beat you through the middle of power. They're going to take contact and then slip a little pass to someone. You know, guys like Gal Fiku are just, they're like annoying flies. You know, they're just buzzing around. They're landing on your nose. They're on the wall. You try to shoo the bugger away, but he just keeps coming back. That's what Gal Fiku is. You saw it there. The loose ball, Fiku's slapping on it. There's a short pass. You know, there's a ruck opportunity. Who's going to be there just to be in your way? It's Gal Fiku. Guys like that are the glue to these teams. But really like the way they attack. They're fast. And just so much fun to watch. And I think, like I spoke about, you know, Ligarik, I thought that number nine was instrumental to that French team. Since he's come on through the bench, looked impressive, earned that start, he's made a massive difference. I think poor old Lusu will be wondering, you know, what his club team's playing next, because he shouldn't be really appearing much more for France. Ligarik's got that on lockdown. So I'm really afraid of France in the future, because when they get Dupont back alongside Ligarik, they are going to be really dangerous for 80 minutes through that nine channel. But England, hey, Ollie Lawrence, man, what a player. What a player Ollie Lawrence is, right? Who needs tens and who needs a kick when you've got a battering ram like Ollie Lawrence that is just going to take this game by the scruff of the neck? If we're going to sum it up, defense, well, you can do it if you want to, but we like to have the ball ourselves. And you know, you can go make an error in your half. We'll be happy to play it down there. But if you're going to kick it into our half, we're just going to give it straight back to you. So we'll make sure we catch it. But if you make an error, we are going to pounce. And that kind of summed that game up for me. Neither side wanted to play in their half, as you kind of want to play rugby, right? But just trying to force the other team into an error or a bad kick. And once they were in that, you know, 40 meters from the line sort of area, it was on. And both sides showed incredibly the ability to attack and score with some really, really good precision as well. So it was fun to watch. It was good to see two teams who knew what the game plan was, execute it well, and look really dangerous with ball in hand, which is something that I don't believe I would be saying about England.
So Andre saying, yeah, he forgot this channel existed. Oh, wow. Painful. Oh, stabs me in the heart there. There we go. Ben Earl cost England at the end. He's been one of their best. Every player will make mistakes. He's had a cracking tournament. You can't be blaming him at the end there. If you're blaming your tournament on sort of one penalty at the end, I'm sorry, but or your game, you shouldn't be leaving it down to one penalty from that point of view. But surprisingly, England outscored France with tries in this one. So a bit like that Wales Italy game, where Italy again won that game without scoring the tries. France here again winning it with off the boot of Thomas Ramos, hence why he got the man of the match with his four penalties and then also three conversions as well. England early injury to Furbank. As well, put when you had the Marcus Smith show there at fullback, is that really where we want him? I think a lot of people will say that. Look, I want him at 10 rather than at 15. But hey, he got a run out there, and England managed to survive that early injury as well. Ollie Lawrence, you say, picked up tries either side of half time, which got England back into this. And it did take a late penalty on the Hooter to win this game, which I don't think is where we expected England to be. Let's be blunt. France was supposed to be challenging Ireland for the Grand Slam here, and England were supposed to be basically getting their asses handed to them in this game, put bluntly. It's funny, isn't it, how the two supposedly hardest games are the games that England actually turn up and play the best in, against Ireland, against France. The games against Scotland or Wales were kind of pretty close in there. So interesting that, yeah, the better the opposition, the better England played. I guess in some way you might say that's might have happened at the World Cup again with their best performance against South Africa. Not that I'm going to go back to that every time for the next 4 years. So, yeah, look, it's coming into this one, I say for France, we said that France should be hitting for that Grand Slam. They never were after that poor performance against Ireland, let's be honest, to start off with. And it took them three games. Well, it wasn't until their fourth game. They actually managed to put a team together. And they just weren't getting selection right. So you've got to say that they have underperformed in this tournament, or below expectations. England, we said we'd be finding it out with Scotland for that third place. Sure, they finished up coming third behind France, but three victories, two losses to Ireland and to France and Scotland, to have pushed Ireland so close, who were looking so good up until that round. I think England have and sort of shown an attack as well. I think England have sort of just gone slightly above expectation, not miles ahead, but I would say slightly ahead because of getting that win over Ireland, which I don't think any of us saw coming.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. Yeah, England definitely, yeah, I guess their expectation, like probably would have been similar to what our expectation of them was, right? To compete, try and look for those top places, if they can, top two, you know, try and compete with the top sides, which I mean beating the two top sides certainly would have gone a long way towards that. But yeah, I think in the way they developed the game and showed that they have more than just a one game plan. I think that performance, I think it was in round four for England against Ireland, where George Ford had a shocker, didn't he? I think you mentioned it before. He had an absolute disaster game. And they were very reluctant to bring on Marcus Smith. And it kind of bewildered me a bit when your key number 10 is having a bad game. How bad can your reserve be? You know, surely you can't play any worse, right? You kind of got to take the plunge. That concerned me a bit with the reluctancy to go to the bench if someone's not performing. But it did show, too, that England don't have to rely on that number 10 so much. Typically, I guess, you know, in the Farrell days or the last couple of years, if Farrell's having a stinker, the whole team's having a stinker, right? So it's good for them to progress up from there and show that they've got players who are capable of you know, leading the team forward from that aspect. But they got to sort out selections. I mean, I'm not sold on Slade. I'm definitely not sold on Elliot Daly. But that back row, you know, any team with Ben Earl in it, I am excited to see, because that guy is an absolute freak of a man. Just incredible workhorse player. That penalty at the end against the French, it was a bit unlucky. But, you know, you go on with that sort of low height and no arms and you're asking for trouble. And Ramos missed a shot at goal about a minute before that as well. That was a little bit further out. So, you know, French are lucky. They got a couple of stabs at the old cherry in the end. For France, though, no, this is a disappointment for France. No, not good. Poor start. Recovered late, but, you know, they would have wanted a tournament where they could, you know, be happy with it. Certainly won't be happy with that off the start of the opening few rounds. Really killed it right from the start. Game one. After game one against Ireland, they would have gone, no, this is a bad tournament. Let's go to, recover and salvage what we can. So, yeah, bad. England, yeah, improvement. Give them a just above expectation.
Yep. And Simon says, yeah, that's lots of talk of relegation or bringing South Africa into competition. Have now sort of gone quiet with these current results. Yes, oh, no, Georgia must be given a chance. Italy, yeah, shown they should be here, absolutely. Happy with the makeup of this tournament. Don't mess with, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, kind of thing. So on that one. So, I think that talk of those sort of things has pretty much I think it has been put to bed for now. Will it raise its head again if Italy go with five losses? Absolutely, it will do. But there you go. We'll have to see. Sunday. Steve gave the small sports radio channel a shout out. Look, it is a small channel. Don't worry. I know what we are. We tried to make it during COVID and we failed. But hey, we just plod along now doing what we enjoy doing, which is talking about rugby.
That's all that matters.
I'm not going to be too upset. Let's quickly sweep through then the last couple of rounds of Super Rugby. So in round three, we had Moana Pacifica losing to the Rebels 23-29, the Waratahs losing to the Highlanders 21-23, the Fijian and Drua beating the Crusaders 20-10, so back-to-back, 2 years in the bounce. The Brumbies beating the Force 22-19 and quietly going about their business. I think a lot of us thinking, actually, the Brumbies weren't looking too good. But hey, when we look at the table, you're going to be, they're quietly going about business there. The Hurricanes, not so quietly going about business. 29-21 beating the Blues. Another side that, from memory, this was where the Blues, again, injuries in their back three, ended up with players out of position, playing a scrum half on the wing again. Wasn't good for them. And then the Reds beating the Chiefs 25-19. So, wow, hang on a second. The Chiefs are supposed to be the team of the tournament that are going places. Some nice upsets in there to bring the tournament to life. And the surprise of the Chiefs, of the Hurricanes, going undefeated up until that point.
Yeah, we're starting to learn about what teams have got the business about them, aren't we, a few rounds in. But it's good to see that we're not just getting, like, much like Six Nations. We're not getting what we expected, right? We're getting a few tip-ups. We're seeing some teams that we thought would be in those bottom fours that actually are competing up. So, yeah, the Hurricanes, we criticise whether they had the ability to win, stay winning, and mentally win those big challenges and those big games. And we've definitely seen them. I thought that game against the Blues was a game that they could have very easily lost. They could have very easily lost that. And I think Hurricanes teams of the previous, you know, decades would have lost that game very, very easily. But how good to see the Reds, though. Really, really good performance for them to beat the Chiefs. Definitely the highlight of that weekend to pick up that victory there. But, yeah, we're seeing, you know, teams that you would think winning. You know, I don't know how your picks are going, but for me, my tipping competition is an absolute disaster because, look, you look at that round last, not weekend gone, the one before. You know, Moana took form into that game versus the Rebels and then lost. The Waratahs took their win against the Crusaders into the Highlanders in Sydney, and lost. You know, like, that's a game where it's like, well, you beat the Crusaders, surely you'll beat the Highlanders in your own backyard. Nope. The draw back home, very hard to beat. But, you know, you'd think even the Crusaders, the way they are now, have given that more of a nudge. But they didn't look in that game at all. They looked completely out of their depth in that matchup. You know, the Force are competing. You know, whatever way you slide it, this is actually turning out to be a competition that's improving to be incredibly hard to pick. It's a disaster making the picks for the weekends on these games. So it's great to see. And it's good to see the Australian teams, a la Reds, really putting up a competitive side that's going to be very difficult to beat. And, you know, Les Kiss for me needs to be in that Wallaby setup now. The way he's instilled a passion and a determination and just a mentality in that team to near on die for that jersey is what is making that Reds such a good team. You take out that Queensland mentality they got at the moment, and that team would be mid-average. But I just think they've got such a passion for themselves and belief in their abilities in their squad. They are really, really hard with the way that they're playing for each other and playing as a team as opposed to just, you know, going out and playing for the Reds.
Yeah, it's going to be worry about some injuries and the depth they have, having lost Isaac Henry there.
Every team.
Well, that's true. You're picking at the moment. You're in third place in our league with 14 correct after four rounds. I'm eighth with 12 correct so far. So, yep, I only had 2 round points last time. Absolute shocker last round entirely. So moving on then to round 4, the Crusaders losing at home to the Hurricanes, 10-14. Boy, oh boy, this is the worst start for the Crusaders ever. And you've got to say, how long will Penny be in that job, playing himself with that kind of record? Now, to be fair to him, it does help if you've got a fly half available and they're not all injured. Now, getting in a guy who is part of the extended reserve list for the Chiefs and flying him down south, when you consider that how much the Crusaders believe in drafting through their own players, through Tasman and through Canterbury. But to bring a guy in, and look, it's not his fault. Like, the guy did play as well as he could when you've only been there for less than a week and told, hey, here you go, here are the reins to run the team. I'm like, what? Who are these guys? I've never met any of them. I'm just learning their names. Never mind what the play, what the playing setup is. So on that one, it does help if you've got a fly half. Rebels down 26-53 by the Reds. That team that you've just been waxing lyrical about. The Force losing to Moana Pacifica 14-22. I know this Moana Pacifica side seems to be up and down all over the place at the moment. If you're trying to pick for them, good luck, because who knows? They're a bit inconsistent, but they are getting wins on the board, which they haven't done in previous seasons. 2 wins and 2 losses so far. The Highlanders, 21. The Brumbies, 27. The Brumbies, that team that we were talking about being not playing like the Brumbies and playing very well and being, oh dear, Australian sides are in trouble, suddenly find themselves with 3 wins and just 1 loss, including a win against a New Zealand side. The Chiefs bounce back to beat the Fijian and Drua 46-29. Look, playing in Fiji, playing Fijian and Drua in Fiji is very different to playing them away from home. Yes, I think the Chiefs got themselves a nice easy one there. And then finally, the Waratahs 10, the Blues 12 in that final round there. Again, a Blues team that we talk about being, yes, exactly, you're falling asleep there. A Blues team we talk about thinking about being an attacking side, only racking up 12 points. Boy, oh boy. That didn't go right, did it, in that final game. But yes, picking at the moment, really difficult. Only 2 teams left with no wins. That's the Crusaders and the Force. I mean, doesn't compute. The only undefeated team in NC has gone on all their games so far, the Hurricanes, which shows you that basically it is extremely tight in the rest of the table. At the moment, sure, your Reds, Chiefs, Blues, Brumbies are the next ups with only just 1 loss each. But only 1 game behind them are the Highlanders, Rebels and Moana Pacifica. Now, if you'd said that pre-season, we'd have laughed at you at this stage, because I think those teams we'd expect wouldn't all have 2 victories each, especially the Rebels and the Moana. Remember, the Rebels came into this going, is anybody paying us next week? Mm-hmm. Are we going to get paid? We think so. But there's radio silence coming out of Rugby Australia. They've said they'll look after us for a year, but really? Can I have another job, please? But hey, they're managing to turn up and put in some good performances. So, good on them. A couple of teams there. Moana Pacifica again, brand new squad. I mean, they're like 17 or so new players, brand new coaching setup. We're thinking, boy, oh boy, these guys are going to take a while to settle in. Bang, two wins in their first four games. Is that as many wins they got all last season or more already? So clearly, so it's already a successful season for Moana, if you look at it from that point of view. Dylan, yeah, it takes me to hearing Paul talk about the Crusaders is depressing. Well, I say at the moment, the performances are depressing. Let's be honest.
I mean, where do you start with that Crusaders team? I mean, where do you start? I mean, they need someone to take direction. I mean, I have to sit here and say, for Hoepa to take that 10 jersey, he looked very composed. You kind of feel like they told him, just go out there and do what you can do. Like, he missed that first kick, and I thought, oh, dear, his head's going to go. He's going to be gone. But to his credit, I mean, he looked very calm. He didn't look rattled, given the situation, the fact of the result, and the way that, you know, the game was going. He actually looked like he was fully in control of his own game. Sure, it wasn't a great game, but he had a good shout of it. So I'd give him props, because I thought that would be a very easy game to completely lose your nut over, and he did really, really well. But
for me, especially that first kick where he totally shanked.
Yes.
I'm definitely not putting the result at his door. No way.
Oh, no way at all. No. That's what I mean. I thought he would have lost his marbles after that and completely gone. So, yeah, props to him. Maybe another week or two in that setup, he might come around and get even better. So, the only way is up for him. But, yeah, Hurricanes look really, really good. Just about blew that game, though, really. Lucky to win it, scoring right in that last minute. So, they've taken a lot of games right to the death, this Hurricanes team, which, if you look at it in a positive aspect, it means that they actually are learning how to win games at the end, which is something the Hurricanes team has not typically known how to do, right? So that's always a positive, but I think they'll be ultimately disappointed with the results in the end of how close that was against a team who didn't really threaten too much. You know, you take out Sivu Reese out of that Crusaders team, you take out Sivu Reese, and there's not much going on there. Sivu Reese did a lot of work in that game. Boy, he saved a number of tries. He created a lot of opportunities. He is really on his lonesome there as being a standout player in that Crusaders outfit. So we'll see how they go in future weeks. It's not looking too great for them with their next few fixtures in the competition. Your Reds look incredible. Rebels weren't bad, but the Reds were just phenomenal. How else can you put them? They did close that game out quite late. They're scoring a couple of tries in the last minute. We, you know, made it like a high 30s to 20. So ultimately kind of blew that scoreline out a bit like France did against Wales. But yeah, I mean, it's good to see the Rebels scoring tries though, right? I mean, typically this is a game where you'd see them score, you know, 8 to 12 points or something like that. To come out here and get 26, be within, I think they were within about 13 points in the last 10 minutes. Not terrible, but certainly a lot for them to improve on in that side. Andrew Callaway's a bit like Sivu Reese in that team, though, isn't he? He really is the guy they go to and makes a massive difference for them as well for that Rebels team. Moana, yep, hot and cold, but good to see them actually running hot for a change. We've seen them running cold and cold and cold, so actually picking up wins, getting a bit of continuity. You know, Sikopi Kipu scoring a try. It was almost like watching, you know, a bulldozer just roll over off the side of a cliff to get that one. So, yeah, good for them, good for him. It's good for the competition. And a close look. The thing is with these low teams like this, like the Force and Moana and the Rebels and things like that, they're actually not playing bad rugby, right? They're not playing hard-to-watch rugby. It's still decent quality. It's still close games generally. And it's still, you know, good to watch. So that's what I find the biggest thing about it. They're scoring good tries. They've got key players. They know how to use them. And that's becoming a key aspect for them as well. Moving through. Highlanders, yep, we won't talk about that one. No. Like Highlanders, I think Highlanders lost their cool a bit in that game. They blew a lot of chances. And they kind of looked a bit rattled. Like, they almost looked as if what they were wanting to do, they were unable to execute. So they had an idea of what they wanted to do. They had a game plan, but they couldn't make it work. Whether it was the Brumbies' defense or what that was, but when they had the ball, it just didn't look like it was doing what they wanted it to do. Just things weren't coming off. They're getting frustrated. They're making silly mistakes. A number of things like that weren't working about them. Corey Tool was a freak. If I'm going to sum that game up, that kid is just a freak. He's so fast and so hard to tackle. If he's on in a Wallabies jersey, you know, there's going to be outright. I will join a riot for Corey Tull. He's my new James Lowe. Literally, he's my new James Lowe. Moving through the Chiefs. Look, the thing that I was unhappy about the most about this Chiefs game was after the match in the interview where they said, who was it to? Jacobson or someone like that? You out-Fiji'd the Fijian team. And I thought, piss off, that's a horrible take. That is a dreadful take because the Fijian team plays like absolute X-Factor, blasting. No, how they played, right? They dropped a lot of ball. They had a lot of breaks. Yeah, that's Fiji. The Chiefs are a lot more professional, clinical sort of team where they don't take those, 20% risks. They just played a good Chiefs game. Their back line is quite explosive. Their forward pack is decidedly average. But the back line was good enough to get the job done. The Fijians, they played their game. And if they actually come off and ticked a few of those extra boxes, they probably would have scored an extra four tries. So that to me was kind of like a really off thing to say, to comment that, because they didn't do that whatsoever. And Damien McKenzie, just get away from me. I read all these things saying he is the 10. I mean, if you want to know why McKenzie will not or should not be the All Blacks number 10, go watch them play the Reds. That's all I have to say. Last two weekends ago, game against the Reds, go watch that. When he's got his pack in charge, he looks phenomenal. When they're not in charge, like they're not going to be in charge against England, they're not going to be in charge against South Africa, they will struggle against Australia because it's pretty much the Reds. All these other nations, Ireland, all really good packs. McKenzie's going to be going backwards, he's going to go sideways, and he's going to lose meters, okay? That's it with McKenzie. But yeah, good for the Chiefs, did what they had to do. And the Blues and the Waratahs, we have to talk about this game because it was really bad.
No, you don't. We can move on.
The Waratahs tried the best they could, but the Blues just looked horrible. And it was a real bad advertisement for the competition. 12-10. Oh, yuck. Yucky, yuck, yuck. But well played. They got the win. Hey, Tane Edmund played a really good defensive game in that game. He saved the Waratahs conceding a lot more tries. We know what he can do with ball, but it was good to see him actually shine as a defensive player. So, yeah, positives. A lot of positives. Waratahs are a lot better than I expected. So that's a big plus for me. The Blues can go to Scotland with Finney Christie.
The comment on from Dylan saying, yeah, I love Franks, but his time is done. I'm sorry, but you have a 100 cap guy coming on off the bench. You expect him to bring on some sensible play, not when you're already a man down, you're within one score, time's running out, to give up a yellow card. I'm dumb play from a guy who's so experienced. That's exactly why you have him on here, is to not do that, is to come on and be measured and bring calmness and execution at the death when you need it. Very, very poor play by Owen Franks there to do that from that one. Anyway, looking forward then to round five and having a quick look at this one. This one, if you're a tipper, in some ways, these are really easy tips to pick. But good luck with this season.
Words.
Hurricanes versus the Rebels. I mean, Hurricanes, you've got to go with Hurricanes being perfect so far. Rebels, sure, they've got two wins and two losses, but Hurricanes have been perfect. 4-4 at home on Friday night. Easy pick there is to go with the Hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
Use your words. Who are you picking?
I'm concerned. No, the fact that this is, it's not in the Cape Town, it's in Palmerston North, which is intriguing enough as it is. They should win this one quite easy. Hopefully, this is the game we talked about, right? Mentally, can they, they got up for the games they consider harder. This is one that they may go, oh, it's the Rebels. Cool. You can't do that this season. You just can't do that. So, yeah, I'll pick the Canes. But be wary of a player like Callaway really gets his snot sorted. He's good enough to put them away. Defensively and one weapon, that's all you need.
Next up then, the Moana Pacifica travel to the ACT Brumbies. It'll be cold there. It will not be very nice, pleasant conditions for for Moana. So again, you've got to say Brumbies is the obvious pick here on this one as well.
Yep, Moana. Look, Moana's good when they're in New Zealand. I think that's the place where they want to be. I don't think they'll like. I don't think they'll like going to Canberra for that one. And the Brumbies, I think, are getting better. I think they're getting more improved as the competition goes on. So I think I'll give them a good fright. I hope the positive is if they're cold, they might want to run more, which means, you know, you might see players actually coming in and looking for work and trying to get involved. Can I take that one, maybe? Get them in there?
You can, but I mean, if you look at Moana's results so far, they lost to the Highlanders in New Zealand. They beat the Fijian and Drua in Melbourne. They lost to the Rebels in New Zealand. They beat the Force in Australia. So their two wins have been across the ditch in Australia. They've lost their two games in New Zealand. So
Round count, though? Super round doesn't count.
That's in Australia. That's not in New Zealand. So it's bollocks what you're saying about them.
But it's against Fiji, who don't like playing outside of Fiji.
Yeah, no, I get that. But I'm just saying, this idea that Moana Pacifica played better on New Zealand soil is not true.
I certainly think they played better against the Highlanders than they did against the Force.
Even though they got
in terms of the way they played, style-wise.
Anyway, moving on. The Fijian and Drua at home in Fiji against the Waratahs.
Fiji.
I'm sorry, but that's an obvious home win there.
Lots of points. Waratahs need to learn how to tackle.
Yeah, there will be lots of points. There should be lots of points that one. And there's someone says, currently my Maldives don't really have a home right now. There is no home advantage. Correct. They've got don't have a home to play in. It's a joke, that is. Chiefs versus the Highlanders in Waikato Stadium. Again, you've got to say the Chiefs are the obvious pick there at home with that one. I know you won't like to say that because you're a Highlanders fan, but the Chiefs look like the obvious pick there as well.
Yeah, I don't know how the Highlanders are going to go travelling to that one. We'll see. Yeah, especially after last week. I think selection wise, they need to make a number of changes. I think they risked a few things against the Brumbies and it kind of didn't really work. Where they should have just continued on with the progression they had in those early few rounds with the squad and the consistency and build from there. So hopefully I'll back them to beat the Chiefs, but if you want to be boring, go the Chiefs, whatever. Do what you want to do.
Then we got the Blues against the Crusaders at Eden Park. Now the Crusaders, 0-4. The Blues, 3-1. Again, this is an obvious pick. Blues at home, looking at form.
I mean, what does Dills reckon is going to happen in this game? That's what I really want to know. Has he got the faith that his Crusaders are going to go to Auckland, where they don't really like going anyway, and pick up winning against the Blues? No. Blues, sadly. As much that, look, it pains me more to say the Blues will be the Crusaders than it does say the Chiefs will be the Highlanders, because it's the Blues.
Yeah. So we got to, so far we're running on 5 home wins. The last one, I think, will be going the other way, though. Force hosting the Queensland Reds. The Reds looking good this season. The Force 0-4, away win for the Reds. And as I say, I think an obvious consensus across all 6 games as to who's going to win, which means, boy, oh boy, only 2 of them are going to win. All the rest will be different, having looked at my picks so far this season. But this looks like an obvious round from a picking point of view. But I just don't believe it.
What do you reckon? I'm looking at this and I'm saying, well, you reckon that the 3 upsets. I reckon the Rebels could to topple the Hurricanes, who will go into that complacent. The Highlanders could beat the Chiefs.
Look, I mean, the Tars could beat the Fijian and Drua, right?
I was going to go with that one, yeah.
So I mean, there is opportunities here for upsets, but I'd say from a picking point of view, this is a very easy round to pick, in theory. There aren't a lot of games here where you go, oh, geez, that's going to be a tight one either way. The Crusaders now have got themselves to a stage, whereas previously you go, Hurricanes going down to play away in Crusaders last round. The Crusaders just don't do that. So that was a hard one to pick, even though it's common sense what he said, or hindsight tells us it was an obvious one to go with the Hurricanes' perfect record versus unperfect record. But I say there's none here that look and go, God, that's going to be a close game at the moment. The only one would be the Blues Crusaders normally, but you can't back the Crusaders with this record. All of them. So at the moment, this is, in theory, an easy picking round. I just don't trust this. League this season.
No, neither, not at all. I mean, do you do a risky? Like, you know, you think there's going to be something. It's weird you put the risky on. Like, you know, I like the Waratahs one because you know they can be good. And we know the Drua can completely lose their marbles as well. But I think that one comes down to confidence in the crowd. You know, Drew will go up 3-6, you know, 10, whatever, score an early try or two, that game's over. That's it. It's done. As soon as that crowd get involved, they're done. But the rest of them, it could be a long night. I mean, the way the Blues are playing, if they, you know, if that Blues game is, you know, cold, frosty, damp, and becomes a very, you know, forward dominating game, as much as, you know, the record doesn't say it, you know, that opens it up because it's not going to be, you know, big swings and turnarounds. Just hope that, you know, if Hoepa plays again, that he's going to sort out his kicking tee and sort that out. The one I don't see is the Reds and the Force. I mean, I don't see that. The Reds is too hot right now, and the Force have got no chance. But yeah, Moana could go on top of the Brumbies. I don't think they've been invincible either. So, yeah, I mean, it's anyone's round. Go the Rebels. No, actually, no, because I want to see the Hurricanes stay at the top.
But it's like one of these ones where, again, you can say they're in Druid. They've only won once this year. But then again, they've only played at home once this year. So so you might say, oh, yeah, look, the Waratahs is the obvious upset because, hey, the Drua have only got one win. Yeah, but that was their only home game. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Drua go and win all their home games and lose all their away games, pretty much. I think that is actually even though the Drua are only 1-3, I still put them down as heavy favourites for that one. Well, thank you, Cornflake. Well, obviously, with no Six Nations next week, folks, it'll be purely a Super Rugby side of things. There's been quite a bit of chat in the live chat today about rumours or around what's going to happen with World Rugby qualification or World Rugby World Cup qualification on the men's side. So we might have a look into that and maybe touch on that again next week, because World Rugby, why can't you just keep things simple that everyone can understand? Why do you have to change qualification every single year and make it more and more complicated every single time? Just keep it simple, please, please. Anyway, I'll finish on that. Thanks, Steve.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.